who kept complaining about the smell in the kitchen to his wife. It must be the drains, he said. So she was tipping bucketfuls of drain and blocker down, and then gallons of strong bleach. But no, Gary was convinced. No, he'd always had a good sense of smell, and the smell hadn't gone. He was still grumpy, and it didn't matter that other people said, "Well, I can't smell it so much." "No, it's terrible," he said. I got a good sense of smell. And in the end, his struggling wife managed to find out what was the cause of this rank smell up Gary's nose. It turned out to be his own moustache. But what do you smell like to God today? What does God say that you smell like? The Premier League has started. I have zero interest in football. I've never understood it. Always I felt there was too much skill involved in it. But imagine it's not a football league manager, but a Roman general. It's 2,000 years ago. It's Saturday morning. He's sitting, having his breakfast, not just cornflakes now. He's having a full Roman breakfast because it's a big day. He looks at the fixture list. He knows full well who they're going to fight today, his army. He's been planning it for ages. He assembles a team together, his army, and he gives them some team talk, you know, some fighting talk, like once more into the breach, or we're going to fight for our right to live, or something like that, to wind them up before they go out and fight. Well, seriously, if you're a Roman general and you conquered more than 5,000 soldiers, you were entitled to a public parade. You were entitled to have a public parade through the city streets of Rome, culminating in this big bonanza in the Circus Maximus. And in the parade, your family were granted the privilege of basking in your glory, sharing in the honor of your great victory by walking in the parade. And that's the picture that Paul is using here. But he's using the picture of King Jesus celebrating his triumph at the cross of Calvary, celebrating the triumph of Calvary and marching in triumph with all his Christians, all the ones he's bought, all the ones he saved, celebrating with him, following Jesus all the way to glory. That's how this passage describes a Christian. Somebody who was in the victory parade, or Jesus at the head, because he did it all. He fought, he conquered, he won. There was a song we sung a couple of weeks ago. Death is dead, love has won, Christ has conquered. That's it. And a Christian is somebody who knows that. And they're in the victory parade. Whether they feel great, whether they got arthritis this morning, struggling to get out of bed, or they're nervous about some doctor's appointment has come in. Nevertheless, they're in the parade because Christ has conquered. It's a fact. Now, when my kids were little, before I was a Christian, Saturday tea time, no matter what I'd been doing, even if I'd still been out playing rugby, even though I was old and decrepit, I would try and get home for Saturday tea time. I'd sit them on my lap and watch the A team because the A team never lost. Never lost. No matter how many bombs went off or people who were firing machine guns, A-team never got hurt either, never lost. You know, did you realize Jesus never loses? He wins. He wins. I remember talking to somebody many years ago when I was a young Christian, and this chap said about 13's an unlucky number. I said, "What do you mean by that?" Well, he said, "Unlucky for Jesus, wasn't it?" I said, "In what sense? Was it unlucky for Jesus?" You know what he meant, Last Supper. Yeah, Jesus was betrayed. Was that unlucky? He was arrested. Was that unlucky? He was dragged before the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council. Was that unlucky? He's shunted off to Pilate and Herod, back to Pilate. Pilate asks him then, "Are you a king then?" Was that unlucky? And now Jesus boldly says to Pilate, "Everybody on the side of truth listens to me." What's he doing? What is he doing? He's challenging the judge. He's on trial for his life. And he challenges the judge by saying, "Everybody on the side of truth listens to me." He's on trial for his life in more ways than one, isn't he? But he makes no attempt to protect himself. He puts Pilate on the spot. Pilate in the end says, "What is truth?" See, what's happening is Jesus is calling all the shots. He's in control. He's in control of everything. There was no bad luck involved at all. This was the plan. Because Jesus is the king. He's the judge. And all sensible people in a court of law, if they are the guilty criminals, approach the judge with trepidation, don't they? Now, today we got glib, smart aleck celebrities splurging their atheistic sound bites all over the place, all over the media, because they think that God is on trial, God is in the dock, and they wouldn't mind God coming up with an adequate excuse for the mess the world is in. Why is there poverty? Why is there war? That's the situation that they think they're in, but actually they're on trial. I was reading of a Christian man in the States who had lunch with a CEO, the chief executive officer of this massive multinational company. So there's a very rich fella. And they're having food together. And throughout the lunch, this CEO is complaining about the world. What a mess it's in. And the disobedient and dishonest people he's had to sack it from his company. And so he's going on and on and on. And then the Christian at the end says to him, "Can I ask you a question?" "Oh yeah," he says. "You're obviously concerned. You care about the evil in the world." "Yeah. What have you done about the evil in your own heart?" Silence. "What have you done?" "You haven't got to be Albert Einstein to see there's bad things happening. What have you done about the bad things in your own heart, though?" See, some of us saw a few Sunday evenings ago from Exodus 14:14 that the Lord fights for his people. And when he fights, he always wins. Always wins. He fights when he's before Pilate, when he's on the cross. He's fighting that I might live and that you might live. That's what he's fighting for. Because naturally, I have no right to eternal life. The wages of death, the wages of my sin is death. That's what I deserve naturally. Forever death, everlasting destruction. That's what I, hellish death. See, I was born and I live in the domain of the dying. That's what this world is. It hit me when Anne's brother had a stroke and I went up to Cardiff to see him. And he was in a terrible state, poor Dab. And everybody else was. And it just came to me, this is cruel. This is the domain of the dying. Glory, heaven, there'll be none of this. None of this pain. None of this. It'll be the land of the living. And only God can transfer me from the domain of the dying to the land of the living. Only Jesus Christ can do it. Who does Jesus fight against? What does he fight against? Well, he fights against sin. He fights against Satan. And it's a vicious exchange. It's a brutal, bloody battle. What's he fighting for? See, Spiritists, there's one lives not far from here. Spiritists and Eastern religions, many of them, they believe you could survive the grave. But Jesus was never interested in surviving the grave. He conquers the grave. He conquers the grave. He takes death on by the scruff of the neck and he wins. He conquers. And so Christians, all Christians, if they're genuine Christians, regardless of how they feel, all Christians are in this triumphal parade. All Christians pass through the cemetery, pass through the crematorium into glory, because death is lost. Triumph is not a big enough word to describe it. That's why in verse 14, thanks be to God. Paul can't help bursting into praise. He's writing to a church that needs a lot of help, the Corinthians, but he just bursts into praise when he thinks of this. There's a story. I double-checked it this morning, and I'm even more sure now that it's not true. But there we are. I'll give you the story anyway. It's not verified, okay? But it's rife. It's been very popular, and I've heard it for 20-odd years. There was a man many years ago, early 20th century, he's swimming in a Scottish loch. It's very cold. He gets cramp. And a young medical student on the bank there sees him in difficulty, swims in, and drags him out. Okay? Well, I'm sure that happened many times. But in the version I first read many years ago, the fellow who's got the cramp, who is drowning, is Churchill. And the young medical student is Alexander Fleming, according to the story. Okay? Now, I don't know if it's true or not, but according to the story I read, Churchill never forgot this fact, that it was due to Alexander Fleming, later very famous for discovering penicillin. But Churchill never forgot the fact that Fleming had saved his life. Now, what has Jesus done for you? Honestly, what has Jesus done for you? Are you in the parade at all? The passage says there's a beautiful aroma to God that every Christian has. They don't have to try and have it. If they're genuinely born again, if they're saved, if they're converted to Christ, if they're his, then there's a beautiful aroma. Is that you? It's the aroma of loving Jesus. They love him. They're overwhelmed, that is, we sang, only by, they're overwhelmed at the fact that he's shown them grace. He's shown them grace. Why them? Somerset Maugham, author. Hands up, have you ever heard of Somerset Maugham? Okay. He said this. He wasn't a Christian, but he said this. If I was to write down every thought and every deed, everybody would label me a monster of depravity. Now, he's an honest guy. Have you come that far? Have you come that far? Now, it doesn't make you a Christian, but unless you've come that far, you'll never go on to be saved. So you have to see what you are. Here's Somerset Maugham saying, if I wrote on everything I went through my head and everything I've done, then people would be disgusted with me. Now, have you seen that about yourself? There's a book, Captain Corelli's Mandolin. I haven't read it, and there's a film. I haven't seen it either. But apparently, at the end, they're Italian soldiers, Corelli and his friend Carlo, who's a big strapping fella. And apparently, near the end, the Nazi soldiers line them up and they execute them, the firing squad. And as the command comes, fire, unnoticed, Carlo just steps a foot to the right in front of his Captain Corelli, who's a huge fella. And the bullets sink into this barrel chest of Carlo, and he falls back on Corelli. And this is what the writer says then. Corelli now lays there with dead Carlo on top of him. He lays there, and this is what the book said. Paralyzed by Carlo's weight, totally drenched in his blood, and stupefied at such an act of love. Have you any idea what Jesus has done for you? Have you? I was just reading this morning of Jesus being betrayed, and I was just thinking what he's done. Have you any idea what Jesus has done? Not just what he's done, but what he's done for you. Have you any idea? Are you in this train, this victory train? How do you smell this morning? The decay of death, or some smell like that? Or the fragrance of life? It doesn't matter what others say of you. It doesn't matter what I think of you. The only thing is, what does he say you smell like? That's all that counts, see? It doesn't matter about them, or your friends, or neighbors, or people in church. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. Do you smell of Christ? Do you smell of forgiveness? I remember 20-odd years ago, we were doing a teenager's camp, a Christian camp, and two girls had applied. They were Roman Catholics. They didn't realize it. This was a Bible-believing camp that we were doing, and they came along. They were lovely girls. They came to the first meeting, the first night, and I preached the gospel for about 10 minutes, something like that, and they were thinking people, so they came up to talk to me. They said, look, we're Roman Catholics. I said, okay. And they said, look, we haven't heard anything like this ever, mind. We haven't heard anything like this. We are hit for 6 years. We're not sure whether we should have come, okay? I said, so can I ask you girls, you believe in God? Yeah. What's he like? Oh, he's holy. Right, okay. Do you believe in heaven? Yeah. What's it like? It's perfect. Okay. Are you perfect? No. Do you know anybody perfect? No. Could you ever be perfect? No. Could you be perfect by religion, by trying, by doing this, by doing that? No. I said, do you realize, girls, in 2 minutes now, you've dismissed every religion in the world except biblical Christianity? You've realized how quickly you've seen it? That is, we can't do it. And wonderfully, we don't have to. He's come down. He's come down. The Son of God has come down. We can't triumph. You can't triumph, can you? Have you ever tried to change something about yourself? It's hard. You know, might give up the fags, give up the drink, give up watching porn or whatever. You know, people can do a little bit, but you can't change what you are, can you? We can't triumph, but he can. And the energy required for him to change people like me and you is so immense that the sun stopped shining on a Friday afternoon. No eclipse like in America this week. The sun stopped shining. Creation cannot cope with what is happening. The Creator is on the cross for you and for me. So that John 11, whoever lives and believes in me, says Jesus, will never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe it? Amen.